You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Minutes after 8 on a Tuesday, that would make it 5 minutes after 11, where my guest is located. Joining me, Chris Woodbridge, Colonel, United States Marine Corps, infantryman, retired, editor, publisher of the Marine Corps Gazette, and publisher of Leatherneck Magazine. Woody, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mac. I'm doing very well, thanks.
All right. I won't tell people why you're doing well, but the the hay is in the barn, the cows are in the pen, and
it's a good day at the farm.
Hey, I have to tell you that I'm a little bit shocked that the battalion commander in Parris Island got a letter of reprimand and a fine of $1,000 a month for 5 months, and when a recruit dies. When his failure to obey an order from his regimental commander to remove somebody who had charges of recruit abuse that had not been adjudicated led directly to that, and who made false official statements. Am I out of line in that? I mean, and again, I don't have access to the to all the records of the court martial, but at face value, I look at that and say, is that it?
Well, first of all, I share your head scratch on that, but also, and again, I don't have any privileged information either, but this is our, in this case, it's our legal system, our military legal system, and this was a plea deal. In return for a guilty plea, as is ubiquitous throughout our legal system, civilian, criminal, civil, and military, there is a the practice of expediting due process by pleading to lesser charges and accepting in many cases for that acceptance of that guilty plea some lesser punishment. But I'll also point out that the other, the trailer on the truck is what's called the Board of Inquiry. And so in any case like this, the legal procedure, the court-martial, does one thing, and then following behind that is an administrative procedure called the Board of Inquiry, which really will make determinations as far as characterization of service and how... essentially, just to put it very simply, at what pay grade a given Marine is allowed to retire at. And so, where that goes from here, I really don't know. I wouldn't speculate.
Mm-hmm.
It's not double jeopardy. It's just, mm-hmm. punishment is punishment, but then administrative action to determine whether you're allowed to retire as a lieutenant colonel or retire as a major, or if there are other facts in play, it could even result in a further loss of pay at retirement. But again, I'm purely speculating. But the brevity of this procedure, reducing it from a scheduled week to 1 day, essentially a guilty plea is tied to the level of punishment. So in return for a guilty plea, you get a reduced sentence. You cannot like it. You can scratch your head over it, but that is our legal system.
Well, I'll tell you, in terms of message sending, if I was, I would say he skated. He got off. And I thought that the Marine Corps would be message sending to every commander in the Marine Corps relative to the sixth step in troop leading. It's not enough for you to sit in your office every day and stare at your computer and do all the shit that we all, have evolved to doing now. All right. And that's not enough. You got to get out there and you've got to supervise this kind of shit, and you got to make it not happen. And let me tell you, the regimental commander as well, you give a guy an order and you don't supervise to make sure that guy is not working, and then you don't relieve this guy for doing that. I don't know how I know that he became, in his deal, you know, he became a witness, and then for that, we got this. It's not in the, so I guess my point is, not much message sending here. It's like, this can happen under your watch, and, you know, and for $5,000, it goes away. $5,000, you're going to be allowed to retire. So on the upside, $5,000, he's going to retire as lieutenant colonel. That's it. No brig time, no nothing else.
Well, and wow. Again, I'm not disputing that. He may not retire as lieutenant colonel. Don't know. But
as of today, he may wind up without any other intercession, he retires as lieutenant colonel.
And there has not been a BOI yet, and there will be. But I'm not trying to, you know, defend this away.
Yes, you are.
I hear you loud and clear, and I think there is a disconnect between the audio and the video on this.
I was just surprised when I read it. And I read it a second time. I sat here and I said, "Holy shit! I don't believe this. I don't believe that the gunner." And this is one of this is to me the disconnect between the audio video and the video, right? Enlisted guys get the wood laid to them, okay? But the people that supervise them, like Abu Ghraib, nothing happened to those people, right? They got letters. Enlisted people they go to prison. You know, the same thing in hazing. You know, hazing Marines are going, you know, they're going to the brig, you know, and the people that are in charge of them are supposed to execute the six-step in troop leading. Now, I know you can't be there all the time, and I got that, but I don't know. There seems to be a different standard for officers, and I think it's wrong.
So. Yeah, there's a fine line. You know, we say the commander... the leader is responsible for everything the unit does and fails to do.
Right.
And we all get that drilled into our heads, and I think that's absolutely vital that we get that drilled into our heads. But not so much. Comes off the rails, sometimes, that might not be quite as black and white. And I don't know whether that's purely a negative, as you point out. I wouldn't disagree with that. Sends a bad message, sends a mixed message. But it also, it also sends a message that, we're not going to do things without due process, and that our legal system will come to your defense.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not trying to paint a happy face on it, but you know, there's another side to this.
You're trying to
all laws bind equally.
You're trying to be the grown up, and I'm not, which is fine with
me. Yeah, that's kind of the way these things go.
you were a senator in the Marine Corps. I was not even a member of the House. But here's my point: is why would this battalion commander, when given an order, not comply with the order? Why would he think that he could do that? And so, to me, I thought the message that was going to get sent was, hey, we have to make an example of him, all right, that he was culpable in all of this. We believe that. And so we give the regimental commander immunity, and this is what we got? And so, to me, the reason you send him a message is for every other lieutenant colonel, detachment commander, everybody, every other OIC or whatnot looks at that and says, wow. Guy's going to the brig for failing to supervise and making a false official statement. Holy shit, man. All right. I guess it's time to shut off the computer and get out and about and amongst them and making sure that I'm present and that the things I say and what I focus attention on are actually being done, because people are going to get held accountable and I can't supervise that stuff sitting here returning emails all day. And so, not that that's what everybody does, right? But I'm just saying, life's a little bit different for leaders in the Marine Corps now that they have computers. come in the morning. Used to be you meet your first sergeant, you meet the sergeant major, you walk through your area, you go to chow, you see the Marines. Now guys can go, they'll get there at 5:30, they go into that office, they might break for PT, but they're there all day servicing email. And so I don't know. I thought there would be a more definitive message that got sent, and I'm honestly stunned at the outcome. So anyway. We can leave that at that. Or do you have any other comments you want to make?
No, I don't. I don't disagree with it. It is surprising. I do think it sends a mixed message. And I also agree with you on the fact is the email can't be the excuse. I mean, the fact is it's harder. It's harder to execute all of your responsibilities as a commanding officer today because of what I call the three inbox principle. You know, you've got an inbox sitting on your desk with paperwork in it. You've got an inbox in the voicemail on your phone, and you've got an inbox in your email. And, you know, all of those are important. All of that work has to get done, but it has to be prioritized against, what I'll call your physical presence in and amongst the Marines that you're leading. So, it doesn't mean you get to not do one or not do the other. You gotta do them all. And that's why I say it's a different environment, and it's in some ways a more challenging environment for time management for leaders today.
You know, well said, and that's why I thought that there would be a statement made to all commanders in the Marine Corps that, look, I don't care what else you're doing. Number one thing you've got to do is you've got to supervise your command. And you will not be, we will not understand, all right, if anything goes sideways and you're standing there doing the Porky Pig thing saying, yeah, but I have three inboxes and so I couldn't really supervise this. And yeah, I know it felt.
Yeah, now you're using it as an excuse, as
right,
a crutch.
Right.
That doesn't work.
But I'm a good guy and I tried hard. And again, the ominous words that we all hear and you and I have talked about this before, I think. When you hear it, it's like when you walk around the corner, and Woody's had this experience, in 29 Palms at the Camp Wilson Head, and you come around the corner, and there's 30 shitters online, and there's no walls between them. You stop, and you're like, what is this? Like, who in God's name would conceive of something like this? Okay? It's the same kind of head-scratching audio-video disconnect that we're talking about here. What? So, I'm perplexed today. What it looks to me is that the Marine Corps will understand. There is an excuse for it, and I just thought something different would come out of it. So we share that. I think we share that. So you're much more mature in your approach. So congratulations on that.
And the individual is still been convicted on a guilty plea, still getting punished, and. Well, that will forever be on his record as he transitions after whatever BOI, Board of Inquiry, into civilian life. He's still going to have that on his record, and I would say he didn't get off, he didn't get away with it. He was not punished as severely as perhaps he should have been.
Okay, that's fair. I'm not being fair though. I think that the reason these things happen is real interesting. I had have you ever met John Stevens? He wrote a book about the Ribbon Creek incident.
No, I've never met him, but I've read several books on Ribbon Creek.
You may have read his book. It was written I want to say between 2000 and 2005, and he actually interviewed the gunnery sergeant. His name escapes me. Because you still
was the title of that "Keep Our Honor Clean"? Is that the?
I don't know.
Is that the book?
I'm not sure.
But he did. He did firsthand interviews with the drill instructors.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk to you because you hear Ribbon Creek brought up whenever something happens at Parris Island or MCRD in San Diego, and you know how does this happen again and again, and you know it's a series of factors, and one of them that seems to be constant is a lack of presence by battalion and regimental commanders and in the organization, allowing cancer to grow. And I, you know,
yep.
you talked to General Jarvis Lynch, I talked to General Joe Hoare, and they who both you know presided over those and says, hey, there's no easy way. You have to be out and you have to be amongst them and you got to get to know them and love them, just like every other command. When you know them, you love them, you know their problems, and they know you a little bit, then guess what? These things tend not to happen. And so, and that's why.
Well, I think the key is, as, and, you know, and this can come off the rails as well. So as the commanding officer, particularly, at a level of remove, you know, as in battalion to, you know, series or platoon, you're not so close to the problem, that you lose perspective. You are the check and balance who is at enough distance from the day-to-day business of training recruits, that you can, see when things are starting to, you know, get off the reservation, violate the SOP. And when the leader at that level gets too down into that
right.
daily business,
right.
then you can lose perspective. There's a, so there's a tendency, and some people would argue that human beings are, you know, hardwired in our brains, perform these sorts of abuses. When you're in a position of that much control over other human beings, there's a fair amount of research out there that points to a natural tendency of the human mind to go to those excesses and to abuse those other humans. There's a great book called The Lucifer Effect by Dr. Philip Zimbardo. He was the psychology professor at Stanford who conducted the Stanford prison experiment back in, I think, 1972, 74, early 70s. And he has been called as an expert witness at, the Abu Ghraib trials. He's been called as, expert witness in a number of similar, incidents in other venues, in prisons, in schools, sports teams, fraternities, whenever there is an environment where one human or group of humans are in complete control of all aspects of another group of humans' lives, it really does appear that there is a natural tendency, if unsupervised, for the human to abuse that situation and start abusing that other group, controlled or subordinate, group. That's why the recruit depots, entry-level training, that's why officer candidate school, that's why other environments like prisons have such black and white SOPs, and why there are series, levels of checks and balances in supervision of the people closest to that controls population, be they recruits, prisoners, what have you. When any of that breaks down, either the SOP is ignored by ignorance, or more importantly, where the oversight of people who are removed by levels from that direct contact with the population, whenever that goes away, then you're going to have abuses, and it's incredible how fast it starts to happen. And it can be within 36 to 48 hours, there will be physical abuse, verbal abuse, and it invariably turns extremely dangerous. So recognizing that and knowing that that's out there, it makes it even more important for that leadership to be present, visible, engaged, and, as you say, doing the six troop leading step.
Yeah, and which makes the trial even more the outcome even more curious, because the one thing that you would think that, you know, that what breaks squelch for me as a battalion commander, okay, charges of abuse, who is that? Guys who have multiple charges of abuse, who is that? Guys who have unadjudicated charges of abuse, and that's what Gunnery Sergeant Felix had. And so it's just, you know, again, it's just a head-scratcher. The gentleman's name is John Stevens III, and he wrote a book called Court Martial at Paris Island, the Ribbon Creek Incident. And very riveting. And really, he said it talked about the climate of what it, and how much discretion in, I believe it was 1956, that drill instructors had. And he was a Navy veteran from World War II, who joined the Marine Corps and rose to the rank of gunnery sergeant, and very, very interesting story, to include Chesty Pullers agreeing initially to testify for the prosecution, and then when he got up on the stand, he essentially said that the gunnery sergeant didn't do anything wrong. And he didn't follow through on the testimony that he was supposed to give. So pretty interesting. And then the burden that the gunnery sergeant lived with for the rest of his life, because the problem, as it boils down to, is he had never been in Ribbon Creek. He had heard other drill instructors say, yeah, well, when I want to thrash him, I just take him out and we, you know, I'll hike him through Ribbon Creek. And he had never been in it, and he hit a part of it that they didn't go on. It wasn't a route that they tended to go on, and that resulted in the drowning, I want to say, of 10 recruits or whatever it was. But very interesting. The book is entitled Court Martial at Paris Island, the Ribbon Creek Incident. Since we're talking current events, let me get off the rails a little bit. The president's going to meet with Mr. Kim. What do you think? What's the editor of the Gazette think about that?
I think it's, on the surface, first flush, it is, certainly a historic event for, for those two particular heads of state to actually, sit down and have a meeting. That's historic in and of itself. What will actually come out of that meeting? I'm not too hopeful. Honestly, I think it could very well, and again, it depends on what lens you're looking through. So,
how many lenses? Okay, hold on. How many? I'll pick one. How many lenses do I have?
I'm going to say you've got at least four lenses.
Okay, what are they?
So you've got the U.S. administration's lens.
Okay.
You've got the North Korean regime's lens.
Okay.
You've got the North Korean people's lens.
Okay.
And you've got the Republic of Korea, South Korea's lens, their government and their people.
Okay,
they actually have a fifth lens, which is the people of the United States.
Okay, I want to look at the U.S. administration's lens, and I'm going to give you two options in that lens. I'm going to give you two views in that lens. One is we go there, we make a breakthrough. And because he grew up in Switzerland, and he really wants to be affiliated with the West, he doesn't want to be the hermit kingdom any longer. He'd like to see his people progress economically. He doesn't see that going through China. He sees it as some kind of relationship with the West. He's willing to denuclearize the peninsula for certain guarantees. Okay. Now, some will call that a pipe dream, but okay. That leads us to the breakthrough. Okay. And then. They sit down at the table. The other lens is they sit down at the table. Trump asks him very blunt questions, and he says no. And then the meeting concludes, and the President of the United States walks out and says, we cannot make a deal here. So which one would you like to take up first? Give me your thoughts on that.
Let's call the first one a best-case scenario.
Okay, the best case.
And maybe, it may be there has been already some reporting coming out of the South that this is, the purpose of the meeting is to negotiate denuclearizing the peninsula in return for something. I cannot imagine that that something is not going to involve cash payments to North Korea, and some lifting of trade restrictions on North Korea, in which case both sides could call it a victory.
Right.
You know, the class of the art of the deal, best negotiators in the world, or, you know, we got the capitalist American imperialist running dogs to roll over. They'll both claim victory out of that. And in
Woody, truth be told, we would do that in a heartbeat. I mean, look, you know.
Yeah. In the big picture,
yeah. Why,
that
why
is a, I would
That's
say a short-term, I would say it's a win, but it's a short-term win. Prior experience shows us that whenever you hit a point in the cycle of escalations where the North does come to the table at any level,
right.
There will be some deal struck, some level of accommodation on both sides, and then that'll last for about another 3 to 5 years before the escalation cycle starts again.
Mm-hmm.
So unless the one capital C change that is, I think, not going to get on the table, because essentially the North has laid this down as the survival of their regime,
right.
Which means not unifying the peninsula,
right.
Into one country again.
Right. Right.
So unless that's on the table, there isn't going to be any capital C change.
Okay, but why wouldn't that be on the table? I mean, who's into the unification of the Korean Peninsula under one flag? I don't think anybody who's realistic. The elephant in the room is him having nuclear weapons.
Well, it is the stated policy of both governments.
Oh well, okay.
As we sit here right now, both governments do not acknowledge the legitimacy of the other country.
Okay, so we'll
North Korea believes that they are the legitimate government of the entire peninsula, and that all the population of the Republic of Korea are in fact their citizens, and the Republic of Korea says the same thing officially.
Okay, so we'll fix
that. There is no country.
Yeah, we'll fix that. So we'll fix that. Okay, everybody will say, we'll agree to the obvious. You exist, and I exist. What we want, what the optimum solution is going to be, is a economically viable North Korea and a peaceful coexistence of the two countries. That's what we believe is the art of the achievable and the denuclearization of the peninsula. And it will be guaranteed, what paper do we need to sign that we can verify?
Well, I don't disagree with you, but I think those are two different things.
Okay.
I think denuclearization of the peninsula is a required a precondition towards the acknowledgement and some form of reconciliation. I don't think that can happen while you have a nuclear buildup going on.
Right.
But I also think that the nuclear buildup is a bargaining chip in and of itself to secure short-term gains for the North Korean regime. As history has proven, that regime will do whatever serves its purposes, up to and including sacrificing its own people. I don't see this contributing to a long-term fix.
Okay, let me ask you this: assuming that it falls apart.
This is the second scenario.
Assuming that it falls apart, where does that leave us on the backside of these discussions? And let's just say they meet two or three times, and at the end of the third meeting, the President of the United States walks out and says there will not be a fourth meeting. He is not serious, and we will go to the UN and begin the implementation of a blockade of North Korea, or request the implementation of a blockade of North Korea, which points us in the direction of war. Where do you see us on the backside of?
Well, that doesn't put us in two different a situation than the status quo right now.
Right.
And the simple fact is it expedites it though, right? Well, not necessarily. No. I mean, the fact is there is for all intents and purposes a blockade The UN will never vote on anything more than exists right now, because China will not vote for that. And, oh, by the way, China is also the only semi-legitimate trading partner that North Korea has. So I think it would put us essentially back where we are, without any real progress. And that will be a harder outcome to spin in a positive light for our administration. On the North Korean regime perspective, it's still a win, because we stood up once again to the imperialist capitalist American regime.
Okay, so China blocks us in terms of the blockade. At some point, we either act or we accept life with a nuclearized North Korea and the opportunity that they can begin to export that technology for their own financial gain.
Yep, that's it. That's okay. Where we are now.
Okay. All right. One other thing before we get to the Gazette. Exactly. Well, come on. You're a big-time literary guy. I mean, how can I bring you on the program and not examine, how well-read you are? The Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, changes made there this morning. Thoughts on that? Good, bad? Just business as usual?
It's a honestly, I'm not as well informed on that topic as I might be. I think it's surprising, but it's interesting to me because a lot of statements about running the country, running the government like a business, and there are certainly some businesses that are almost in constant flux at the executive level. People either produce or they don't. People either support higher decisions or they don't. And in those businesses, people go away routinely. That's a little uncommon. Certainly to date, that's been uncommon in our in the executive branch of the government.
You sound like you've worked for General Mattis.
I have. But
what would you? I don't want to go down that road too far. But if you don't produce on that stuff, what happens to you in short order?
You go away. You go away. And you go away with no. In no uncertain terms. As I say, a little bit surprising. The timing of it seems odd to me. If in fact, we are going to make this breakthrough, that is a diplomatic effort. And, I'll be interested to see what comes next.
But Mike Pompeo, obviously, a guy who's well thought of by the president, gets along with the president, and well respected on Capitol Hill, so I guess we'll see what happens. All right, the current affairs.
And again, I don't know. I certainly know what's in the open source media about Pompeo's background. We'll just have to see. Some people would say it's been coming for a while.
It seems to have been coming for a while. All right, I'm exhausting.
exhausting current events.
I'm exhausting current events with you. Other than that, the biggest news story of the day is several bases will delay suns out, guns out, rolling the sleeves because of weather. So when that's your lead story, that's categorized as a slow news day.
Slow news day.
All right, let's talk about the Gazette this month. Tell us about the theme. And I will tell you, just to give you much credit, Chad Buckle has been on the program. He'll come back again.
Yes.
as I know he's taken over the Gazette in terms of his articles. And Buckle.
Well, he's prolific. He's prolific, which is good. I like an author who, is willing to write, multiple articles.
And again, writing in the detail about the configuration of how he sees infantry training, how he sees it staffed, all very timely as the Marine Corps has gone down the Sea Dragon 2025 road, and so interesting.
Well, and timely also in we mentioned General Mattis, his direction on a close combat study within DOD, again really focusing on small unit infantry to increase lethality and other capabilities down at the where the rubber meets the road level. I think it's very informative. Major Buckle is going to have, again, a series of articles, both in print and online, that really work their way from the basic training level through the squad all the way up to the battalion. The intent of publishing those is to inform this internal Marine Corps discussion and then also how the Marine Corps integrates into this broader DOD level study.
So I just wanted to give a tip of the helmet to you on that deal.
I appreciate that.
Not a problem. All right, so theme, and tell us about this month's Gazette.
So the March theme is, it's sort of got two layers to it. We're largely focused on training issues, but also this is the first, what's the word I'm looking for, salvo of articles that have been written by Marines that are assigned within training command. And just a little background on that, Brigadier General Bohm, the CG of training command, implemented a command-wide PME program. And a feature of that was a professional writing program and a writing contest, an essay contest. And so his staff reached out to us here at the Marine Corps Association and Foundation and the Gazette to support that essay contest. Training command is an enormous and diverse command over 50 schools and formal learning centers that are spread around around the world, underneath that headquarters here at Quantico. And so all of these Marines who are instructors from everywhere, from the schools of infantry to major school detachments at Fort Leonard Wood or Fort Huachuca, Lackland Air Force Base, our Navy side in the MATSIGs, all of those instructor-based Marines have put the work in and participated in this professional writing program. In this month's edition, you've got some of the first publishable articles coming out of that program, and then you've also got next month, just to highlight a little bit, in April, we'll have the overall winners of that contest. So three Marines, first, second, and third place winners of that contest. So, this is worth talking about because it just highlights the importance of command interest in PME and incorporating writing into the other components of PME, be that professional reading or lectures, classes, etc. So it's a real win across the board. We're glad to support units when they want to do some initiative like that. And this month we reap the benefits of it in the magazine.
All right. So give me a couple articles that I want to read. General Bohm was one of my students and got in my crosshairs last week in the whole discussion about IOC standards. I don't recall having a non-evaluated event at IOC, and now there's evidently there's only three evaluated hikes. My understanding, when I was there, everything was evaluated. I don't understand a non-evaluated event, I guess. And so anyway, he got in my crosshairs. We're not lowering the standards, but we're raising throughput, and we now have non-evaluated events. Okay? To use a Woodbridge-ism, a Woody-ism, the audio and video aren't really syncing up on that. Where's my engineer? How does somebody explain this? So I got to do a little bit digging and get him on the program so he can explain that. Because again, in this whole issue of gender integration, one of the things that we've talked about is not lowering standards. One of the things the Marine Corps has done is you got to validate your standards. You got to make sure your training serves those standards, and those standards are rooted in the requirements of the battlefield. And so,
I couldn't agree with you more. There, I've been receiving a lot of letters to the editor about this issue. Some of those are going to be published in next month's edition. And frankly, it needs an explanation,
right,
from the leadership. And frankly, I don't think that's necessarily General Baum's responsibility to answer that question. I think it's above him. So we'll see how that plays out. But you're right. There is a fancy word. There's some cognitive dissonance there.
Right.
It's a subtlety of not changing the standard, but not requiring anyone to meet it anymore.
Right. Right. So you can imagine the shock when you read that there's a non-evaluated hike. What do you mean? And there's more than one. You mean that I can fall out of those hikes, but I can make these three that are evaluated, and that's okay, and I can go out and command somebody? I could. And again, the double running of the O course, which has given so many people so much trouble, it shouldn't be pass or fail, but it should be a requirement. If that's the standard, it should be a requirement before you leave. You got to do that. If you can't do that, then you can't graduate from the course. So we're not going to drop you on day one because it's not easy. And in these difficult physical tasks, and I don't care, there can be stuff like the dirty name at Coronado is an obstacle where you jump from one log to the other. You try to hit the second log in your stomach, but it's just high enough and far enough away, depending on how you're physically constructed, that there's guys who are physically fit that have trouble with it. And it takes them days of repetition to get through that thing. But guess what? They get through it. And then there's little guys who physically just can't do it. And I got that. But most of these things, other than that damn dirty name thing, are designed that with the appropriate technique, anybody of any height, weight can do this. And so, to me, that's the deviation from the way we've done things in the past. Non-evaluated, you can fail it. You know, blah 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 blah, but we're not lowering.
From a training, you know, if you want to talk about a training management perspective, if it's non-evaluated, why do it?
Hello.
It begs the question: is that formative training that's non-evaluated, or is there some other expectation of the trainee, of the student, that's not related to an actual training standard? I don't know the answer to that. I think we all deserve one.
Right. All right. All right. We'll leave it at that. Email question. Hey, Mac, I was watching a parade the other day. I like goose stepping. Does Woody think that goose stepping is a good look in a parade? We're going to have a big one in November. Hey, just for the record, Woody, I'm pro parade. There's all kinds of units. It's their job around D.C. to be in parades, okay? Once it starts raining, they don't parade very much. So to have a Veterans Day parade, a great one, to get corporations to pay for it, and to have a day where you honor veterans and active duty personnel, I think is not a bad thing. So I'm pro parade. Just so All Marine Radio pro parade.
I would agree. I'm pro parade as well.
Nice.
And no, without a doubt. I mean, it's a little outside our tradition,
right,
in the United States, but you know, I think we need to be open to change. I think if it's done, as you say, in recognition of our veterans and our service members.
Yeah, service and sacrifice. I think it's awesome. Yeah. I would tell you this. I think that if anybody who's ever been to when the nation rolls out its military pageantry, and I've seen it twice. I saw the internment of the Vietnam Unknown in 1985, in the spring of 1985. We were given the day off at the basic school to go to it, and up we went and stood on the bridge behind the Lincoln Memorial, and watched essentially the funeral procession of Abraham Lincoln and John Kennedy go up to Arlington. Let me tell you, it's tremendously impressive. The other parade I saw was the victory parade after Desert Storm. And that was awesome. If you can imagine seeing Marine Corps battle colors with battle streamers from curb to curb coming down, I think it was Constitution Avenue, there next to the mall. And unlike the other services where the battle colors were kind of a rolling kind of barrage, the Marine Corps colors were... And you saw it, you're like, yeah, we can march at least. And you saw the pageant.
So, to the original question, I can't endorse this. It's not in our drill manual.
I'm with you.
Not in the NAVMAC 2691.
It's not in
the barracks and the ceremonial drill instructions. That's not the way we do it.
For God's sakes, the Nazis did it. Okay, you can't do anything.
You know what? If you're gonna goose step, you need to be wearing some kind of jack boot,
which is
not in our dress uniform. So,
you're right.
All right.
So wait. We deviate. So give me a couple articles. You talked about the program that Training Command has.
Sure.
The articles. So give me a couple of good ones to read.
Well, actually, we've mentioned General Boehm. General Boehm's got a great short article, really about the role that that Training Command plays in sustaining the transformation, kind of that key bridge between entry level training, the depots, and the first operational unit that a Marine goes to. A critical linkage. As every Marine knows, you know, the difference between what goes on in recruit training and out in the FMF or in the fleet or at your unit can really cause, frankly, that disconnect between audio and visual. We say this, but here's how it actually works, and sometimes that can start at their MOS school. So good article there. Great overview and a little bit of history of our current integrated training exercise, the ITX. So, not the CACs, not the Mojave Viper or Enhanced Mojave Viper, but how we are doing that level, that battalion squadron level live fire combined arms training today. And that's from the written by the staff of TTECG on 29 Palms.
All right.
So very good article there. I'd also point everybody, there's a it's a little wonky, but a good discussion of our simulation supported training, and that's by Major Michael Donaldson from Provost, the Simulations Officer with MSTP. Title is Constructive Simulation Shortfalls, and it really talks to, the restraints and constraints of our system, which is called MTWAS in the Marine Corps,
mm-hmm.
That we use to support our CPX training. So good educational article there. We mentioned there's obviously a whole section on PME, section on force fitness as well, to include the martial arts program. We talked about Major Buckle's article. This one is on the 15-man rifle squad.
Right.
And then we also have an article from newly created organization, the staff of the Personnel Studies and Oversight Office, which is I don't want to say a one-year anniversary, although it has been about a year since the Marines United story broke in the open media. And this article really kind of lays out what's been done as in terms of short-term, long-term fixes to that underlying issue and the, you know, the near-term, the proximate issues as well.
All right. Chris Woodbridge.
It's not a, it's not an anniversary of Marines United, but it's, it's essentially the ground truth on what the Corps is doing to address that, that problem.
And that office is called again?
It is called the PSO, or the Personnel Studies Oversight Office.
All right. All right.
And that is within Manpower and Reserve Affairs.
All right. That that concludes the formal portion of the interview. All right. Now I'm going to ask you an opinion question.
Okay.
Late last week, another iteration of a website called Hose Hoenn was revealed in an article done by BuzzFeed, I think, who did the original article. It's since proliferated. Should the Department of Defense be responsible for internet content, monitoring internet content, or should there are all kinds of things that happen in the Department of Defense that injure people? Okay, domestic violence is a story about a Marine gunnery sergeant, engineer type, that in the San Diego Union this morning. That's been reduced to sergeant for child abuse after multiple tours in Iraq and came back a different person, blah, 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 blah. I had two nephews that were murdered in a domestic violence incident. There are a whole series of issues that are significant in terms of social issues, non-combat issues, that are part of our culture, that certainly become part of the Marine Corps and the Department of Defense. Is it, should the Department of Defense, and I read this, it was something that, a quote from a former sergeant who founded the hashtag Not In My Marines, I think, is the one she founded. Her name is Erin, and it's a hyphenated last name, and the last name's Como. She said, "I'm a mother, I have a full-time job, yet I found this and pointed it out to somebody. Why can't the Department of Defense do this?" So I'll ask you that question. Should it be the Department of Defense's job to constantly monitor the internet to make sure that sites like this don't pop up, or like most other things of this ilk? And again, this is knowing that the Marine Corps, 60% under the age of 26, 60% of the Marine Corps turns over every 36 months. So it skews to young. So this problem will be an ongoing problem because it's an ongoing problem in our culture. And so the Marine Corps has, I think, done taken steps to factor that into the extra 2 weeks at in phase four at recruit training and a whole series of other initiatives that this article will outline. So question to you, Woody, has the Marine Corps done enough? Should the DOD be responsible for constantly monitoring the internet?
Well, you know, I'm going to I'm going to say yes, but, and the reason I say yes is, you know, to a degree, it falls under what we were talking about at the beginning of the program, the sixth troop leading step, and being responsible for everything the organization does and fails to do. So I think there has to be, you know, yes, but there has to be a appropriate level of monitoring at echelon, and so yes, there's responsibilities at the department level, at the service department and services level, but that does not relieve the responsibilities down at the eyeball leadership level, at the human being level. So we can do an awful lot and spend a lot of money at the DOD or the Marine Corps, Department of the Navy level, or other service department level to vacuum up every electron coming around the internet. However, that's not the only solution. Knowing that that's there, I think would give or should give some people pause before they start hanging pictures, taking pictures, hitting send, etc. But that sort of aversion is not the only solution here. There has to be responsibility down at the, as I say, the eyeball level leadership, human being leadership level as well.
Okay. I just don't think that the DOD ought to be charged with monitoring the internet, looking, you know, scanning on it. I don't think there ought to be people doing that. If you're victimized, if you see it, then you should file a complaint. It should be investigated like we do in child abuse, like we do if it comes to anybody's attention. It's incumbent upon them to report it. But I don't know. To me, an active presence looking for these kind of imageries elevates to a status that I don't know that it warrants.
I understand what you're saying. I don't necessarily disagree with that. That's why I think the caveat has to be there. There needs to be an appropriate level of monitoring and oversight.
Okay.
I think the danger, I think where you're going is the risk is, you know, this becomes a cottage industry in and of itself.
It already is. And what we went from, I want to say that there's like less than, I don't know how many members, and on this newest one, there was, I don't know, thousands of images on the old one. There's 267 images on this one. It's a private group. It's not open. So I don't even know how many members. Marines United was 30,000 members. A small fraction, I want to say less than 2,000, accessed this folder in which these images were. And then the Marine Corps put out a statement, I think, on Friday that detailed the cases that have been adjudicated so far in the Marine Corps, I think 89, with something like 12 left to be adjudicated. It's some number like that. So again, I think just in fairness to the Marine Corps, and I hammered him at the start saying I thought that Lieutenant Colonel walked on, he got off easy. I will say this. I think the Marine Corps is doing what it should do. Now, can it be all things to all people? I don't know that it can. Is this more significant than child abuse, than domestic violence? I don't know. So should it have more assets allocated to it than that as we look at the different, social needs inside the DOD? I'm not sure that it should. I don't know that it rises to that. So anyway, but I think initially what happens is you see Marines United plastered all over everywhere, the Marine Corps, this problem still hasn't gone away. Well, let me just say, there's 267 images on this drive. There was thousands on the other one.
Right.
They've now migrated to private, closed, all-male sites. And what is in my head, and then you can comment, is I can fix a lot of things. I can't fix stupid. So the idiots that are part of this, track them down, investigate it, identify who's on active duty, who's a reservist, an active reservist, and if they're under the broad umbrella of the DOD, then punish them. And I think that's as good as it gets. And there is progress that's been made, I believe. Certainly not perfect, but progress. I will cede you the floor, sir.
And I think it's been effective. I think there's two levels to it. As you say, I think the most important level is investigation, prosecution, due process of those who have broken the law, violated the UCMJ. And then I think there's also a deterrence factor, again, in knowing that these collection efforts are out there. That said, do they become the money pit of resources? I think that would be inappropriate. Now, the counter argument that you'd hear is, well, one is too many. I don't know that that's realistic.
Yeah,
I don't know that that's realistic at all.
But you and I both would agree philosophically. Yes, it is too many. Okay, the question is it more important than domestic violence?
Right.
Is it more important than date rape?
I think part of the problem also is it was new and novel.
Right.
Okay, we are in the new the new territory of online behaviors, social media, and the internet. And that makes it inherently more interesting. I hate to put it this way, but other more traditional criminal activity is not as interesting to some people as things connected to the internet are.
Well said. Well said. And I think, and again, it blows up, and it's certainly something we can all scream and yell about. And again, nobody's diminishing the crime. You know, if you're the victim of it, it's horrible. Okay, but when you look at assets to put the problems, and you put this in the broader context of other problems, then you say, okay, so what assets do we devote to this? And which gets me to, should the DOD be responsible for scanning the internet on a daily basis, looking for images or sites? I think that, my own personal opinion, I think that's a bridge too far to charge the DOD with that. But I could be wrong. However, I'm normally not, Woody, just so you know. Anyway,
I understand.
All right, sir. First of all, I always enjoy the visit. I appreciate you not being afraid to give an opinion, Woody, when you come on and talk in current events. It's not what I normally advertise, but I enjoy the conversation.
All right, real quick, very self-serving.
Sure.
Just a quick shout out to our Navy brethren at Joint Base McGuire-Lackland up in New Jersey. You may not believe it, Mac, but you've got a listening audience up there.
Woody, two-thirds of the Earth is covered by water, and All Marine Radio covers the other third, just so you know.
I like it.
All right, bud. Have a good weekend. And what's up in Joint Base Lackland? There you have it. All right. Thanks for the visit, bud.
Roger.
There you have it. Chris Woodbridge. Yeah, trust me. They listen. Nobody else talks about this stuff, at least not like we do. All right, we'll take a break. The Gunner, up next. Don't touch that dial. All Marine Radio continues on a Tuesday. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. Battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do. and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global Stock Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the stock community should be aware of.
The Global Stock Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.